Hi, this is Jenny Chamberlain, and welcome to my Southern Utah Housing Podcast. This season, we're talking about attainable housing.
Today, I'm really excited to have a very special guest in the Hurricane Valley. It's our mayor, Nanette Billings. I say our mayor. I'm from Tocqueville, but I think of you as like sort of my relative mayor, even though because a lot
you
of the cities
up here,
yeah, the city's decisions influence me too, sure, as a member of the whole valley.
Sure.
So Nanette, you're the mayor. Tell us a little bit about running for mayor. Like, what motivated you to get involved in local politics?
Oh man. So a few years ago, I'd gone to a city council meeting. I saw city council members vote against all the citizens. And it made me think, wait, I think they're supposed to be listening to us. And so that motivated me. Mm-hmm. I actually went home and I texted 17 people and I said, you would be awesome. The election's in 4 months. You should consider running for city council. You would be great. I'll support you. And all of the texts came back and said, I don't want to do that. I've never thought about doing that. I'm too busy. I don't have time and I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And later that evening, my husband had come home kind of late and from a meeting, and he said, asked me about some things. And in my prayer that night, I had said, please help us find someone to run for city council. And he said, after he listened, he goes, well, who have you talked to? And I told him, and he said, well, what'd they say? And I said, well, one person didn't respond, but everyone else did. And they all told me the same things about, I don't want to, it's, mm-hmm, I don't have time, all those things. And he said, why don't you do it? And I said, I don't want to, I don't have time, all those same things. And then he said, it's really hard to ask someone else to do something you're not willing to do. And that kind of hit me away.
Well, that's a call out from your spouse there.
And it wasn't that we had bad people running or people, mm-hmm, in the office. It's just I was frustrated with the actual outcome of this particular situation. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, listening to citizens is important. And so I've made that my real focus. It has been. And I feel like that I meet with whoever calls me. I make sure that I take time to be available, accessible.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You've always answered my phone if you were available, responded to my texts. And I think that's a huge deal for a mayor. My dad was the mayor before, and he was fantastic at that. He said, you know, even if it wasn't someone, he was like, oh, I know this person's mad. He would answer it anyway. And
yeah.
So I think that that's great. I think that's a hallmark of a great,
I actually,
great public servant.
He was a good example for that. He, mm-hmm, really did that really well, and I feel like that I learned that from him.
Cool. Well, thank you. That's good to hear. I think Hurricane's been lucky because it is usually somebody who cares a lot about the community who's willing to start to invest the time, because it is a big time commitment to do public service.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. Okay. So today, a couple of things I want to touch on are, because I think they're kind of related, is short-term rentals,
sure,
and attainable housing. Okay. So what do you know about, like, what's going on with short-term rental policy in Hurricane?
We just update our short-term ADU policy, mm-hmm, just like 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. An ADU is an accessory dwelling unit.
Correct. So. And with the, maybe just let me go to short-term first.
Okay, great.
And then the other. But short-term, in our city, we have two different ways that people can get a license for short-term. One is the whole home, and you have to get on a list, mm-hmm, and that's for the entire home. And being on that list means that you can rent your whole home, but sometimes it takes a while, and we only issue 3 additional permits every year based on 1,000 residents of new move-ins. And so, mm-hmm, it's kind of a tough list to be on, to wait until your whole house can be rented as a short-term rental. We have a really good policy to monitor so we don't have calls and problems. And honestly, that's probably the one that we've had, if we've had any issues with those homes, because someone's not on property,
mm-hmm,
those are the ones
you've had trouble with.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as short-term inside of a home, which would be a residential hosting license,
mm-hmm,
that just means someone can have a room or an accessory dwelling,
mm-hmm,
or a basement, or I'm going to say, you can call it a tiny home,
mm-hmm,
a garage or an upstairs to an attic or whatever, mm-hmm, that they rent out. And that, because they're on property, anyone can do that. Mm-hmm. And it's brought in a lot of people, just a second income. It's been really beneficial. The downside to that has been it's the housing market, so people with maybe children or mm-hmm. newlyweds, people that are moving here that maybe a senior couple, they can't find places to rent because those are not available anymore. People are short-term renting them.
Yeah, in the housing coalition, they call it the emerging contributors because yes. they're those young couples that can fit into a smaller exactly. spot, or maybe retirees who only yeah. want something that's really simple and someone else is doing the upkeep. Yeah. So, yeah, it puts a squeeze on.
And then the ADU, we just condensed all three of our ordinances to work together. So mm-hmm. it was very defining. We had some challenges with, if you want to call it just, trying to think of the words, but if you're condensing a ordinance mm-hmm. so that it works. And sometimes when people, they want to look at an ordinance and they're making a decision, a determination on what that ordinance means, this cleaned it up.
Made it more clear.
Just maybe. Clear and clean. Okay. And so that's really what we did this last time. But with the ADU, it just makes so that people can have one. And the setbacks, that was one of the issues. We do have a few that were put in recently, and they are right off the sidewalk.
Oh.
And it's unsightly, and there's mm-hmm. some... And it's actually a home, and so it doesn't have the same setbacks. So we put the same setbacks. We changed just a few things like that with parking, making sure that the parking was on property mm-hmm. rather than... Because people can park in the street. That's legal.
Yeah.
But with a residential hosting, they need to be parked in a parking spot on property.
Yeah. I had a neighbor who had a situation like that in Tocqueville, and the neighbor complained. So she parks her personal vehicle out on the street, and then the visitors park in her driveway now.
They can, and in our ordinance, they have to have enough parking for
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and I think that's a good policy. Yeah. I think that's smart. Yeah. Cool. Well, what do you think? Like, have you had any experience? Do you have any friends that have them? Like, any good stories or things that you like about them?
Yeah, actually, I know a lot of people. Mm-hmm. My husband and I have rented out our basement the last, probably 6 years. Mm-hmm. So way before I was on council. Mm-hmm. And... we've never had anyone complain. We've never had cool. any issues, but that's also within our city. We have not had complaints for residential hosting from police or any of those. It really comes down to the full home, the mm-hmm. full home that's our issue with the complaints, because if somebody's out playing in the pool till 2 a.m, thinking, yeah. well, I'm on vacation, but you're still in a residential area. But we've been able to control that. We've mm-hmm. actually been able to communicate with the homeowners and explain the policies within the city as far as times that you can have quiet hours and mm-hmm. that type of thing. So not yeah. just quiet hours, but there's more to it than that. But,
yeah. And I think some of that can be landlord training. I can't remember sure. what meeting I was in. Somebody was talking about how, man, we signed up for this Airbnb. It might've been just with friends. They're like, we signed up for this Airbnb and they had a super long contract for us to sign before that we would behave and not
yeah.
bother the neighbors. So I'm glad to see Hurricane kind of working with the owners and
we've had a couple of situations, not just a couple, but several. Mm-hmm. But we've actually had to, we've had a hearing officer and had to go to court, and mm-hmm. it's been good because then it makes people be compliant to recognize you have neighbors. I always look at everything within our government. If it's good for you and it's good for me, then it's fine. Mm-hmm. But if it's only good for you and not good for me, then that's not fine.
So yeah, I like that criteria. Like it yeah. helps you find that balance yeah. spot. Good. So what do you think is the overlap between attainable housing and residential hosting permits? You touched on it a little bit, but...
So anytime I think of attainable, because they used to be affordable housing, now they yeah. talk about attainable because you think of, is this really affordable? Mm-hmm. I think with the permits that are associated with short-term rentals and residential hosting, it's limited that amount. But people are also recognizing the supply and demand. So right now we have a lot of people that have had short-term rentals with residential hosting and they haven't been filling up their days. Mm-hmm. So then they've gone back to a long-term, mm-hmm. which has helped with that market.
Yeah.
We do have a lot of people that have been, that are developers that are building and they've started their development. Mm-hmm. and provided for that. It is all about supply and demand.
Yeah, and I'm seeing that in the new housing. Yes. Like a lot of them will have just a casita on the front because the demand has been so high for it. But do you think we are reaching a little bit of saturation in Hurricane in particular?
Yeah, I do.
Because we're a gateway community to the park. And I always think about, well, we have 4 million visitors a year. Are we ever going to be saturated?
I don't know if we're at saturation, but but people that were residential hosters stopped and they've long-term
decided it wasn't worth it anymore.
I know three personally that have done that. And they've just said, I'm just going to go long-term because I just haven't had the traffic they were hoping for. So they hope that they could just get a good person in there, and they all have.
Yeah, I think about how much simpler it is to have a long-term, and I think, okay, it's just something to carefully weigh on a case-by-case basis and how busy you are. Yeah. So what do you know about and what do you think about the attainable housing policy and plans in the city of Hurricane?
So our policies come from the state and the legislature. They determine what our policies really are, and then our city chooses them. This last year, we brought in a plan, and we had to comply with the state. And there was actually, we were required to have three, and we actually had seven.
Yeah, Stephen was just telling me that when I interviewed him. Yeah.
Okay. And so with this attainable housing and moderate income housing, and there's new laws right now that were just legislated recently, and a couple of things that really make a difference in your attainable housing and your moderate income housing is making sure that when the developer and builder are building, that you're able to get their development through quickly instead of waiting and having it go through, take a long time to get through the system. And that's one of the, if you want to call it a bottleneck, and it changes based on how many people want to develop. Yeah. Because supply and demand is a problem here. We're
We had outlier demand for a couple of years.
Yes. Yeah. And people want to live in our area for so many multiple reasons, not just good weather, but because we have good people to live next to us as neighbors, all of those reasons. And so when we are low on demand, it changes that. But this policy through the state right now, I was reading through, and I know two of the things that are really huge. One of them is the engineering department they have a certain amount of time frame to actually review plans. And that's really been critical in our city because that's probably where our bottleneck is for sure. About a month ago, we passed, and I worked on it for a couple months before that, but we just passed a month ago, and this policy is that we're going to go outsource for engineering. So we have firms, and this gives an RFQ, so it goes out for qualification, and these firms will review our engineer plans. And they have to look at the code and know Hurricane City's code so they can know setbacks and all of those regulations. And then after they review it, it comes back to our city engineer and our city reviewers. And once they've reviewed it, it goes back to the developer quickly or the other person that's doing the engineered plans, either the architect or the engineer, that they can hit the red lines and then hit send them back. But with this new policy with the state, it says that they have a certain amount of time, and so it's condensed time frame. That's that's another, and then they can only have four reviews. So it does make so that when you're reviewing, you have to do your...
That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, so they have to do this and be to thorough. Get it out. Yeah, because I actually met with a development company today, and these two developers, they said, we have worked on our project for almost 2 years, and they're just getting done with construction drawings. And so sometimes that can be a long time. I mean, that's time is money. And
They're paying interest on their, if they have a loan on the property. So that adds to the cost for everybody, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Cool. So did Hurricane, it sounds like you guys were ahead of the game as far as getting more engineering help right before this. Were you aware that this was going to be a new law? Saw the writing on the wall?
I actually, and if I can say this with the best intent, they're mad at me, and I'm sorry. You know, it's hard to have staff mad at you, but I could see that there was a bottleneck in the system, and I just said, we have to do something different, and sometimes we have to think outside the box. And first of all, we can't afford more engineering. Our city can't afford that in tax dollars. And this makes so developers have to pay for the engineering, the Not all of it. They can choose not to. They can stay in the system and how long it takes them, if it's 2 years, or they can choose to pay the $10,000. I don't know how much. I put a number, and that's awful because I don't know what the number would be. It might be $1,000. I have no idea what those firms are going to charge for the review. But all I'm saying is I've talked to a lot of developers, like, I would pay to have my plans reviewed so I don't have to wait 2 years.
Yeah.
And so I'm not
interested.
People aren't very happy with what's happened with this, but they also know there is a bottleneck. They know that it's a challenge, so that's where we're moving
out. Cool. So it sounds like Hurricane has an attainable housing plan. What, like, do you like everything about it, or there, do you have any reservations about it? What are your unfiltered thoughts on that?
So attainable housing, and in this at this time, yes, there's a lot of mandates by the state, and I have always felt like Hurricane City has this beautiful small-town charm. And if you go by everything that the state directs you, then it changes the whole dynamic of our city. And so there's certain things that we are doing because it just makes sense and it's good for our community. But they want certain zones to be available for higher density, and I've never been in favor of that, and I'm still not in favor of that. And so I just feel like that it's okay to have larger lots. It's okay to have people be able to develop and build on an acre if they want to, and not be controlled. And that's another challenge that we're dealing with, because the water, it's less usage if you have smaller lots because they don't have big of landscaping to deal with.
And
there are not as many people in the home usually. And so that makes the difference. But as far as our attainable housing, I feel like we have a good plan. And it's very, it's a good concise plan. But are we going to do more? But the reason that this, that our plan actually fits, is because 2 years before I was the mayor, like while I was on council, a lot of zone changes and increased density happened during that time, so we fit within it, the plan. So the council this year, last year and a half, and the year and 3 months that I've been mayor, we haven't had the increased density on zone changes. Pretty much been kind of a hard no. And so but we fit in it before that, so that's why it kind of made it so we don't
so we're doing okay. So here's a question, because I hear a lot of times people talking about property rights, market demands, but finding the right balance between property rights and what's good for the community. And like I feel like I sometimes hear a little bit of a disconnect between, because of the attainable or affordable housing shortage in our area, there is a huge demand. There's a huge market demand for higher density stuff because that's all people can afford. So what is the best criteria, and how do you find the balance between, because I understand everybody wants, who doesn't want to live in a nice single family home with a good size yard? But how do we decide? Because I feel like the cities sometimes do stand in the way of that because this is what we're used to and we don't want to see this change. But I also think, like, one of the things I love about this area is all the open space. And I feel like we sometimes we're caught between open space and density versus continuing to sprawl out with so much larger lot development. Like, what do you think is, like, do you have a personal criteria that you're like, okay, I would approve more density under this situation, but not under this? Like, how do you decide? Are you just like, no density no matter what?
No,
like,
what's your criteria? I follow our plan. And we had a lot of really smart people that helped develop the master plan and figure out where we should have increased density. Multi-use is a good one. And this last year, we've had a couple of situations where we have actually zoned some highway commercial into some multi-use. And so you have your businesses on the bottom. Then you're going to have your housing on the second floor, which is a good use in some of the areas, especially if it's close to schools, churches, shopping, that kind of thing. And so, and we've actually approved a couple of those, but it's in the zone. Changing zones, I haven't really been
not a big fan of.
Because we've had a lot of people that put $90,000 was what we spent 2 years ago on the master plan. And then if you just throw everything out by saying, well, what do you feel? How do you think about, you know, what do you, and so I'm just, instead of how I feel about it, I'm like, there's people way smarter than me. I'm not the smartest one in the room. I'm just going to make sure that if we're looking
at some, the plan.
Following the plan. And then if there's, some things make sense, you can look at them and they've come in. Here's a really good example on 100 North. Somebody owns an apartment complex that has four, and there's room on that area to add three more. And he came in and asked, he said, hey, can we do this? And some of his tenants had come in and said, we've been renting for him for 19 years. He's not ever upped our rent, and he always fixes everything. And they're paying $700 and $800. And he told them, he said, I will never change the rent as long as you're here. And so he's kept his word. And so,
where did you find that landlord? Can we get a copy machine?
And But I'm that it made the council go, yeah, we should let him put three more units right here. Because he's going to be good to the people. He's recognizing citizens. He's also recognizing affordability.
That's awesome.
Right.
So do you know anything like this mixed use one? I'm pretty interested.
But it was zoned for
that
too. Just say that. It was zoned for that.
Yeah. And that's what, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Sure.
I just saw there's this place called Farmstead Bakery in St. George. Have you been there?
I haven't
really
been
good
there.
Food.
Okay.
But they have apartments on top. And I was like, how can I get an apartment above a bakery that I could smell that every day? So do you know anything about what businesses are thinking about going into this mixed-use place?
I don't know about the businesses yet. I don't.
Okay.
And people ask all the time, why don't you get a Cracker Barrel, or can you get a, and they'll name things. And I said, the city government is not in charge of who comes into that business. We encourage businesses, and we go out and try to find people to come into our area to help with our area, but we don't make sure that someone comes in. I mean, that
it's kind of a free market situation.
It is, absolutely. I said capitalism's king here.
Yeah.
And we want you to open a Cracker Barrel. Why don't you open one? We would love a Cracker Barrel here. They named about some different things, and I said, that's up to citizens. That's
Well, and a lot of stuff like that. Those franchises will do research and say, until you have X number of people in the
usually
area,
about 30,000.
Yeah,
and that's rooftops. And we only have about 8,000 to 9,000 rooftops. So there's a difference that we're still.
So we still have to go to Vegas or St. Well, St. George, I guess.
Want Cheesecake Factory? It's going to Vegas. It's still not even in St. George, so.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Cool. Well, do you have any other thoughts about attainable housing? About short-term rental policy that you want to share with my listeners?
As far as attainable, I know supply and demand makes a difference. There's been a few people that have increased their rent for people that are in an apartment or in a townhome. They have expressed their concern with staying in this community because of the expense, where they're paying more than they'd be paying for a mortgage. And that is going to correct, because when people can't fill them, if you
move away because it's too expensive.
Yeah, well, and what I'm saying is right now we have about 24,000 is the number of some of these attainable units that are going to be built. And when we build out, I think you're going to see. Yeah, in the next little bit, when you see that, that makes a difference. Right now with a recession, not as many people are building, but there's still a lot of people that are not waiting on funding. They're not waiting to go to the bank and get a 7% loan. They're, or, and that's usually not for building, but that'd be for someone to get their mortgage. But they're not doing that. These are people that are self-funded, and so they're building these, and people are going to be able to come into them. And yeah, you can look at a mortgage at 7% and think that is so high. When I was younger, in the like the 70s, the interest for a mortgage was 13% to 19%.
Yeah, I've heard that. But it peaked at 18 in the 80s.
And but the cost of the home was much less, and so their payment wouldn't be anything that we would consider be astronomical.
Yeah.
And so that's the challenge, is when you look at the value and also the cost. And so I think we're going to see some of those costs come down. I saw in 2008 when the housing market kind of dropped, and some of these people in 2006 and 2007 bought a townhome for $225,000. In 2010, 2011, and 2012, they were selling them for $95,000.
Yeah, I was just looking at the old MLS from when the first house that we ever owned. We had bought it for like 80 something thousand, and then we sold it 2 years later for 160, rolled it over into our next house. But it sold in 2011 for $38,000.
Yes.
I think that that's like a once in a lifetime type of recession, because it was real estate led. And if we have another, you know, if we're going into one right now, it's not real estate led. But I'm seeing a little softening, but I don't think it's going to be like quite like it was.
Maybe not, but I know that in 2017, we had looked at purchasing a home for an investment, mm-hmm. and it had gone up. And in 2018, my son ended up buying it for $122,000. And mm-hmm. today it's worth $280,000.
Yeah.
Or $300,000. I mean, so I know that what you're saying, mm-hmm. but it happens, and we deal with cycles all the time.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's true. I think with affordable housing, we're going to see some of those corrections. And will things go as low as when our parents build a house? No. Mm-hmm. But you look at even lumber costs. When they get as high as $70 or $80 for a sheet mm-hmm. of plywood, and now you can look at something in the 20s again. That's mm-hmm. that makes a difference in the value.
Yeah, the cost of building coming mm-hmm. down, I think, will help too.
Right.
Yeah, sure. That's a good point. Cool. Well, I think that's all the questions I have. Do you have any other?
No. Thank you for your work in our community. We love to have good people running businesses here. That's what makes our community roll.
Thank you. And I appreciate the city supporting local businesses. I see that over and over from Hurricane, and I love that.
That's so great.
And thanks for serving as our mayor.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Southern Utah Real Estate Podcast with Jenny Chamberlain. I hope you'll think about subscribing and give the podcast a review if you found it valuable. If you have feedback or ideas to make this podcast better, check out my website, jennychamberlain.com, and leave me a message there.